Ali Mirage on LBC. It's 3 minutes past one. Now, this is really interesting. I saw this in the Sunday Telegraph. The bonkers plan to build a brand new city for 1 million people. Really interesting, this. A skyscraper's made of wood, 6G network, solar energy, and small modular reactors serving a metropolis filled with Britain's most ambitious families. Welcome to Forest City One, the working title of the country's first new city in 50 years. Shib Malik, a former investigative journalist, and Joe Reeve, a co-founder of Looking for Growth, a grassroots political movement focusing on expanding the economy, have hatched a £100 billion plan to build a city the size of Bristol. Now, the project would be built on 45,000 acres of land on the Cambridgeshire-Suffolk border between Newmarket and Haverhill. The duo hope that the new metropolis will one day be home to 1 million people, with 12,000 acres set aside for woodland. Now, to some observers, the project is nothing more than a mad pipe dream that is unlikely to see the light of day. But to supporters, it is a DIY attempt to solve the country's housing crisis. Well, we were talking about housing and related matters just a few moments ago. Amid growing disillusionment with the government and a way to kickstart the economy. Let's fight for a grander vision, one that is independent of central state, of the central state, but also not bound to the private developer mindset, which itself lacks any real vision. A website which promotes the project reads, "We need something that points the way on the world stage and lets Britain once again be a byword for ambition, invention, creativity and entrepreneurialism." Now, the proposals have captured the imagination of architects, planners and other industry figures, it says here, who have joined a dedicated WhatsApp group to discuss the project. Sounds very interesting. And apparently, an online petition pledging support has gained 700 signatories, including Grant Fitzner, the director of the macroeconomic statistics at the Office for National Statistics, Dame Patricia Hewitt, former Trade and Industry Secretary, Professor Tim Lunig, former advisor to two Conservative chancellors and three housing secretaries. Now, suggestions put forward by supporters include a transport system consisting of 5,000 self-driving Tesla robo-vans rather than trains or trams. I'm not sure why they're supporting a megalomaniac who wants to earn $1 trillion. But anyway, why not go for BYD? Sorry to be controversial and bring geopolitics into this, but just my two cents. Also, roads designed to support driverless Waymo cars and covered streets resembling the porticos of Bologna to shield visitors from Britain's dreary weather. Well, I do love Bologna, and I do like the idea of porticos. Very nice. Now, Malik, who's one of the other guys, Shib Malik here, admits that the sheer scale of the ambition will raise eyebrows, but he says it comes with an element of dreaming. But people are ready to do something serious about this because the situation is so desperate. While the government is seeking to address the same issues through dozens of new towns, Malik believes the only way that makes sense is to build at city scale, not at town scale. Now, I want to ask you this question. Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? 0345 6060 973, text 84850. I want to hear from you if you are someone who's just tired of the existing lot that you have living in maybe an established city at the moment. You think it's dreary, it's not planned properly, you don't have enough green space, you're living cheek by jowl, it's not sustainable, you'd rather walk if you can, to all your local amenities and to your job. And you quite love the idea of a new city being built surrounded by 12,000 acres of land around you. Are you someone who lives in a rural area who would love a bit of open space, can't afford to come down to London, would be loving to work on the Cambridgeshire-Suffolk border and would welcome this thing? And if you're someone who can't get a house, as we just touched on in part of the last hour, would you welcome this? I would like to hear your thoughts. And if you're someone who lives in a leafy part of the country, like the Cambridgeshire-Suffolk border, would you think that this is an absolute abomination to your way of life and you're going to resist this tooth and nail with everything, every fibre of DNA in your body. Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? 0345 606 0973. Now, joining me is my good friend, Austin Williams, director of the Future Cities Project. Austin, welcome. You and I have talked about towns and cities and planning and other things. Last time we discussed this, we were in Zurich together talking about some of these things. What do you make of the idea of building new cities from scratch?
Well, it's about time. I declare a bit of an interest. I did sign the petition myself on Forest City One, although mercifully I'm not on their WhatsApp group. I can't think of anything more intolerable. But generally, the idea of having new cities is fundamentally necessary. I mean, we do have this conception that there's 4.5 million new homes needed, which is, you know, a pretty sizable city. I appreciate they're in different areas of the country and all the rest of it. But the ambition reflected, or the audaciousness reflected in this proposal, I think is something to be welcomed at a time when we're living in, you know, fairly miserablest kind of times where we don't have big ideas, very, very small ideas. So I do think that what they're proposing is something to get the heart racing and something to get the mind thinking. How it works, whether it works, is a different conversation. But I think that it's about time, maybe, that we started having this conversation. It's 50 years since Milton Keynes, let's be frank, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Milton Keynes, I think Milton Keynes is half the size of what they're proposing, roughly, and it's about a quarter of the population that they're proposing. But that same idea that, you know, we need to have a vision of not just reinventing housing piecemeal and putting one or two new houses or new towns or small villages, but the idea that we have the sense, which we did 100 years ago with the Garden City movement, that we can actually propose a much bigger, more significant intervention in the discussion.
Austin, I mean, you talk about the Garden City movement. It's very interesting because you look at what Sir Ebenezer Howard, who was an urban planner, founder of the Garden City movement, who was known for his publication, absolutely landmark, Tomorrow, A Peaceful Path to Real Reform, 1898, talked about utopian cities where people could live harmoniously together with nature. It led to Letchworth Garden City, Welwyn Garden City. And we've talked about, you and I've talked about things like Richard Sennett, the professor from the LSE, talking about the living city, the fact that, you know, cities should be living, breathing things, and lots of green space as well around it, built around this. Why do you think that the government towns movement, the new towns movement that the government's talked about, is not the right thing and city is the way to go?
Well, I mean, I don't mind, to be frank, whether they are small towns or whether they're large cities. I think we need to build something. At the moment, there's a complete decline in construction activity at a time when we absolutely fundamentally need something to be constructed, not just on the basis of, you know, lowering costs for housing for ordinary people, but generally we need to house people. And there's a really significant deficit in the way the conversation has been held. So looking back to Ebenezer Howard, just to go back on your question, obviously that was a time at which, you know, we've just had people being brought into the cities. Victorian cities were fairly dirty, grubby, congested, polluted places. And this was an idea that maybe we could now move out and have a bit of the town and a bit of the country, bring them together and have, you know, the green space of the country and the urban growth and industrial potential of the city. So it was framed in a social reality of actually taking people outside of their grubby reality. After the Second World War, you know, you had a new towns movement, which was basically trying to suggest that after the demolition of all these areas with the bombing and what have you, there was a need to kind of recreate and rebuild and have a new vision, see the future as a good place to be. I think what we have today is the opposite. I mean, we have a grubby situation, but we have an idea that the future is a bad place to be, or we're worried about it, or we see the future with trepidation, partly because of environmental concerns or wherever it might be. So there's this kind of philosophical dilemma that we're confronted by, which is that there is a need, and we all recognize there's a need, but, you know, let's not do it just in case. It's a risk aversion built into this conversation, which is not obviously helpful.
I think the philosophy part of it is a very important element that you bring in, Austin, because Shib Malik, who's one of the proponents of this scheme, which is going to be apparently launched, if it ever gets off the ground, in Cambridgeshire and the Suffolk border, he's saying this isn't about building a city. This is about solving very specific problems in the UK. Housing, infrastructure, growth, which we think are best resolved via building a city. The city is just the means to achieve some very fundamental open questions which need to be resolved.
Yeah, I mean, there's a parochialism in society, but there's also a desire for change. And we can see that in politics with, you know, the rise of reform or, mm-hmm. or the Green Party, wherever it might be. There's a sense that the established order has let us all down. They're not actually offering us anything of great potential, and therefore we need to have some radical transformation. I think the same thing is to be said, you know, if anybody travels regularly on the rail network, will realize there is a need for improvements. People who travel, who go to the health service, even if they are massive supporters of the health service, realize it needs to be reinvigorated because it's not fit for purpose at the moment. So there's a sense of desperation, and yet it's not being fulfilled. And I think that the idea that, you know, if you say that we can recognize cities as powerhouses of dynamism, of industrial growth, and the Labour Party at least has been talking about the need for growth and productivity, then if cities are that, yes, most inventions throughout history have not been made in the village. They have tended to be as a socialized experience within the urban environment. That's when ideas conflict, battles of ideas take place, and we resolve our social problems on a much more communitarian basis. So I think that the urban discussion is fundamental to what progress means, to be frank.
I think the urban discussion is really interesting because according to the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, more than 55% of the global population already live in cities, and that is expected to grow to 70% by 2050. I want to ask you a fundamental question here, Austin, because I do think that there are different things about why we're being stopped from doing this kind of stuff. Like, one is obviously local inertia, planning and the clunkiness around that. But it's also, is it not, Britain's cultural conservatism. And if you think about Egypt, India, Nairobi building Tatu, this new city there, you're thinking about NEOM, the big line that they're building in Saudi Arabia. China, putting up cities in you know, months or a few years. There's a massive, massive cultural conversation that we need to have here, which is stopping us from doing that. I mean, have we lost the ambition that Sir Ebenezer Howard had, that vision?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that, look, if we start at the very beginning, first of all, there was an article in the Financial Times just 2 weeks ago, critical of the line in Saudi Arabia, which for me is... It's a fantastically nonsensical kind of proposition, a 17-mile-long city, 500 metres high in the air. It kind of sounds stupid, but I kind of quite like the ambition. It's like a space programme for Saudi Arabia. Mm. So, but I was really kind of interested in the fact that it was a completely knocking article. Do you mean this? That idea that, you know, it's the British tradition that we kind of know our place and we have to kind of ridicule big ideas. That is a cultural problem which I think we have to overcome. But I do think that there's now a moment when we are recognizing that we can overcome it, provided we have the wherewithal and the ambition to actually try to kind of raise some critical thoughts. I do think that, you know, We are kind of a pessimistic society, but I don't want to kind of turn that around and say we need to be optimistic if there's nothing to be optimistic about. So I do think having things like this, which are targets, are something which is kind of worth looking at. When we look at the original idea of Forest City, which is in Malaysia, which is a Chinese city in Malaysia, I mean, that failed miserably, partly due to COVID, partly due to the collapse of the Chinese construction industry. But again, you know, China was doing it on a big scale, trying to understand how they can maybe create communities, create a sense of the urban by doing it on a real one-to-one scale basis. The fact that China is an authoritarian country that can just dictate where they're going to build and why is not something I think is admirable. I mean, in some respects, the fact they've done it is good.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to mediate how we kind of project these ideas.
I understand that point. Austin, thank you for getting us underway. Now, 91 cities have been built and announced in the past decade, when the 15 in the past year alone. It seems to be the case that we are languishing behind, maybe because we just don't have the ambition. Look, I want to ask you this question. Austin's going to stick on the line with us for the next few minutes to get us going on this conversation, which I think is hugely important. We need to think big. We need to actually have these conversations, right? Because we're going nowhere at the moment in terms of our ambition in this country. Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? 0345 6060 973, text 84850. Ali Mirage, I'm going to be in conversation with Austin Williams, director of the Future Cities Project, for the next few minutes. You can get your calls in now. You're listening to Ali Mirage on LBC 180.
This is LBC.
Don your best poker face, because you are playing All In or Fold with Johnny Vegas on GG Poker.
That's the sound of me laying down three of a kind after you folded like your nan's best towels. Not sure about the next hand, are we?
So are you ready to face off?
Or are you having kittens?
Meow. A world of rivals. Millions to be won. Are you ready to face off? GG Poker. Download, sign up, face off. Verify at promo.ggpoker.co.uk/thefaceoff. T's and C's apply. 18+. Gambleaware.org.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Hey, have you got a moment? Shepherd's Friendly offers a range of insurance and investment plans to prepare its members for every moment that matters. Like that new set of wheels moment, that getting the keys to your first home moment, or even that trip of a lifetime moment. And it only takes a moment to open a new plan. So, have you got a moment? Visit shepherdsfriendly.co.uk. When you invest, your capital is at risk.
Ali Mirage on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Ali Mirage on LBC 120. Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. William in Paisley in West Scotland. William.
Hi, Ali. Hi, Alistair. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you like to ask or say?
So, yeah, the UK population has grown by 7.5 million since the year 2000. So my question is, how many new cities do we need to build before we realise we have a massive overpopulation issue?
Austin.
Well, I think that the population question is tied in with a big question about immigration, which maybe is beyond this discussion. But I also think that, you know, we do need to build to cater for the need. And that's one thing which has been off the agenda for an awful long time. So the fact is that there are, let's put it another way, there are places in the country where people no longer wish to live. There are shrinking cities as well as the need for growing cities. So if you're living in South Wales, where I come from, a lot of people are leaving South Wales and heading for Manchester, London or abroad. So those areas are now losing trade, losing population, losing dynamism. So whether we can re-engineer that by actually building and creating new areas of industry and dynamism within those sectors and within those geographical areas to re-encourage people to stay is one conversation. Whether we then build new towns to take them away more quickly and rapidly and easily is another question. I think it's a conversation, which I think Ali's kind of pointed to, which is that this almost kickstarts that conversation, which really we haven't been having for a very, very long time.
Yeah, William?
Yeah, so, like, would you want to build 5 new cities, 10 new cities? It's just, like, for me, I just think if you're concerned about the housing issue and you're concerned about services, I don't think building new towns and cities to make people leave South Wales or to make people leave the Highlands or to make people leave North Cumbria is going to fix the country. I think we need to have a frank conversation. There's too many people in London, there's too many people in Manchester, there's too many people in Birmingham, and it's not come from natural births in this country.
Okay, I understand that point, William, and the immigration point is a massive issue which we discuss a lot and we'll do another time. I'll just leave one point hanging. If indeed we do have too many people in London, I agree with you, it's a absolute cheek by jowl around here, and potentially Manchester, maybe building a new city on the Cambridge to Suffolk border might be wonderful. I hope my colleagues from the Campaign to Protect Rural England aren't listening, otherwise they'll completely kick me off as vice president. But there we go. William, thank you. Phil in Swansea. Phil.
Oh, hello there. Thank you for taking my call. It might be a minor issue here. I heard, excuse me, man, I'm just sitting down. I heard you mention that skyscrapers may be built of wood.
Yeah, they might be.
Is wood inflammable? Which is a basic question.
I did think that actually at the time.
No, come on. Seriously.
Yeah, I did think that.
Is that a serious proposition?
Well, I mean,
I wouldn't want to live in a skyscraper that's made of wood because of, you know, I as long as it's got wooden refrigerators that don't catch fire, then that'd be great.
Phil, hold on. Austin, they're talking about building materials, right, and sustainability and how it looks. And give us your thoughts.
Yeah, well, obviously, Grenfell Tower was made out of concrete and zinc. And that kills 72 people. So, you know, we can never avoid disasters. But you're right. Obviously, timber is flammable. That's the very nature of the material, right? But there are ways of fire protecting and all the rest of it. Now, I'm not a big fan of constructing in wood because I do think that that's a way of ticking the box of environmentalism, which I can in some ways do without. I think the best material for the job is always been the case, and steel and glass and all the rest of it have proved their position over the last 50 years. I do think that what you hit upon there is, for me, part of the problem of this new proposal. As I talk about low horizons being part of the issue and this being an ambitious vision, the fact that they're talking about solar panels, they're talking about small modular nuclear, they're talking about timber, you know, these are kind of small ideas instead of the big ideas, which I thought the whole city was being based around. This is a self-sufficiency city where, you know, you can look after yourself and it doesn't feed into the grid. For me, the greatest infrastructural invention of the last 100 years has been the national grid, which has been about taking electricity to every home in the country from centralized, efficient power sources. And at the time, nobody complained about pylons marching over the countryside and despoiling the view, because they all recognized that it was a improvement, social, economic and community betterment for everyone. Mm. Whereas I think this kind of notion of kind of keeping it insular, creating a utopian island by having it producing its own energy and surviving on its own if everything else goes down is not the best way forward for me. That's the one area I would have a dispute.
Okay. Yep. Phil, are you tempted to relocate?
No. I'm happy where I am. I'm in a sort of urban environment.
Yeah.
Living on top of a hill where they've not...
Beautiful.
No danger of flooding, thank God.
Good.
Good. Listen, thank you for conveying your best wishes to our friends in Monmouth.
Absolutely, and I have a lot of affection for South Wales because I stood for Parliament back there in 2001 and I got thrashed completely, but I did manage to beat Captain Beanie from the New Millennium Bean Party, so there we are. Phil, thank you. Judy in Colchester. Judy.
Good afternoon, Ali. Could I ask the young gentleman, please, what are his costings or his plans providing all the infrastructure that's going to be needed, about new hospitals, new doctor's surgeries, new schools, new dentists, all those things? We've barely got enough money going into the NHS as it is. Mm. So where is the money going to come to support all what he's planning to do?
Well, Judy, I think it's a very good point. Austin, one of the senior regeneration specialists who was asked about this new town said there's no public transport, no roads or rails. If you look at the history of where towns and cities get built, they get built where they need to be and where you can get to. The most fundamental element is already broken. Infrastructure.
No, I agree. I mean, first of all, to clarify for the lady who's ringing in, it's not my fault, Gov. I'm not part of the funding process. But I appreciate what you said, because all those items that you've mentioned, I've written down as areas of concern. There is an infrastructure bill going through Parliament at the moment, which is talking about improving and building new reservoirs, et cetera, et cetera. But they don't really seem to have put forward the money sufficient to cater for it. But you are right that the infrastructure doesn't just mean reservoirs or railways. It does mean dentists and schools and kindergartens and all those kind of things, which are fundamental. Now, they have been taken into account, as far as I understand it, in the conversation, in the manifesto commitment. Whether they're going to raise the funds is another question altogether. But I do think that there's something interesting in what you say, which is that going back to Victorian England, when there was this kind of certain sense of pride and ambition, done by the private sector, by the way, not necessarily by the state sector.
That's right.
Of provision of railways to Bristol to then get the ship to America and all the rest of it. That idea about growing the nation was something which was left to individuals, very wealthy individuals and also kind of funders, because the state didn't necessarily see the need or have the funds to actually do it in the first place. What you saw after the First World War and the Second World War was that actually the state stepped in to say the funders now don't have the money to create the conditions to develop and rebuild sufficient to what we need after the destruction of the Second World War. So you have this turnaround, the state interference versus private independence. And I think what these investors are trying to say is that individual investors could regenerate that sense of pride and dynamic, which is lacking within the state sector. So, I mean, I agree with you in terms of we need to have state integration with all this infrastructure, and how that goes about is a question for the next couple of years, I suppose. Yeah. But I think we need to separate out that this is private investment with a big idea.
Judy, just on that particular point, I'm not saying that this city should be built in Dedham Vale, heaven forbid, but if it was built somewhere near Colchester on some beautiful land and it was thought through and it was sustainable and people could go around in robo-taxis or whatever and it was all like small modular reactors and all the infrastructure and sewerage and all the rest of the stuff had been thought through and privately funded, not done by the state primarily, would you be supportive, Judy?
I can't, no, because it's never going to happen, Ali.
Judy, come on, Judy.
No, look, we've got enough houses going up all round Colchester at the moment. They're all joining up with the villages. You know, our hospital is overwhelmed. Everywhere is overwhelmed. In a perfect world, yes, Ali, that would be what I would like. But for the rest of my lifetime, however long it may or may not be, it's not going to happen, Ali. It's just not. We can't cope with what we've got at the moment. You know, it just wouldn't work.
Judy, come on. If we're going for lunch, right, if we're going to have lunch, you and me, at the Jockey Club in Newmarket, right, and we're passing this beautiful Bologna-style promenades and all the rest of it made out of wood on the way, I mean, what's the problem with that, Judy? Come on. We'll leave that one hanging, shall we?
I don't do horse racing. Well, I'm a vegetarian. I don't do horse racing.
Well, that one, touche. Very good, Judy. Good to talk to you. Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? 0345 6060 973 text 84850. Austin, I'm not sure you can stick around anymore because you've got things to do on your Sunday, but I'm very grateful for your time and getting us underway on this very, very important conversation, which I think we need to think about deeply and have a proper national grown-up conversation about big ideas, because other countries in the world are doing this kind of stuff and we're not. So it's partly an ambition thing and a cultural conservatism thing, not just blaming planners and everything else. Austin, thank you. Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? 0345 6060 973. Ali Mirage on LBC 131 News Headlines. James Kitchen.
The Migration Minister has told LBC that major reforms to the asylum system will be firm but fair. Mike Tapp said the changes to be announced tomorrow will stop the UK being seen as a soft touch. Angela Rayner has criticised recent government infighting, describing it as arrogant tittle-tattle. The former Deputy Prime Minister says reports of leadership bids are detached from the challenges being faced by real people. And five young people in their 20s have been killed in a car crash in County Louth. The three men and two women were all travelling in the same Golf when it collided with another vehicle near Dundalk last night. LBC weather, sunny spells for England and Wales, showers developing across northern Scotland and highs of 12 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
Where do you find a clear signal in a world of static? In a time of rapid change, cut through the noise. The Economist goes beyond the headlines to decode the forces shaping today and defining tomorrow. Get the full story. It's more than news. It's a trusted global perspective. The Economist. Know which way is up.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. GG Poker now has 100 grand free rolls on every week. Yes, flipping please. Deposit a tenner, get six shots at a slice of the 100K.
A world of rivals. Millions to be won. Are you ready?
I'm ready for my face off. Now it's your turn.
GG Poker. Download, sign up, face off. 18 plus. New registered players only. Min deposit required. T's and C's apply. Verify at promo.ggpoker.co.uk/faceoff100K. Gambleaware.org.
This is LBC with Ali Mirage. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Ali Mirage on LBC 134. Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. I'm delighted to say that Austin Williams, director of the Future Cities Project, was enjoying your conversation so much with all of you, not with me, of course, that he's decided to put his Sunday lunch on ice for the moment and actually stick with us, which I'm very grateful for, because we're discussing this new plan being put forward called Forest City One to build the country's first new city in 50 years on the border between Cambridgeshire and Suffolk. Matt says this, Ali, a great topic. I'd be in favour of in building cities from scratch. Our current cities and towns are based on a model that existed 200 years ago. Power supply, transportation systems, living accommodation and workplaces are no longer fit for purpose. We can continue to try and improve our cities, but that is just half measures. What is better is to start from scratch. Let's think of the future and get away from the short-termism that has been holding our country back for decades. Thank you, Matt. Austin, quick thought. If the current system isn't working, why not just build from scratch? Because you can actually then design properly and build in all this new tech into a new city. Good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fully behind that. I mean, obviously, you can't just kind of maybe throw away cities. They still have to exist. I mean, what we did have when we were looking at Canary Wharf is the fact that that whole potential of developing towards the east of London had the potential, in some respects, to kind of create a new dynamic for a new city. What actually happened was a lot of the infrastructure tapped into the old networks, and therefore that's one of the reasons why we have overuse in some respects of the electricity and the sewage and the water grids. So, yeah, I mean, I'm all in favour. I think that basically we should recognise that there's a potential for new development and go for it.
Just on that Canary Wharf point, I don't live far from there, but I was at Stratford's down the road from me, and I was at Stratford's new V&A storehouse just on Monday. What a beautiful thing. And they made the whole East Bank. You got the V&A, the Sadler's Wells, where I'm going to go for a pantomime or whatever later. I mean, really, really nice. Totally reinvented the whole place, and it makes you feel good. William in central Scotland, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ali. Good afternoon, Austin. This reminds me of a scene from the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory when Gene Wilder says, "We are the music makers and we are the dreamers of the dreams." And so I've included that quote as just, just to put a little bit of water over the detractors here, I think this is absolutely fantastic. I don't think this is bonkers at all, Ali. I think this is what's missing. We need to think big, and I think people like me are a contender for being the 2025 version of Mr. Angry, because we're angry at the vision of the future that we're being sold by the politicians. And I think the future belongs to us, not the politicians or the people pulling the strings behind them. And the future belongs to visionaries and entrepreneurs. So well done to all the team behind this. And for me, it's a step in the right direction. It's not a particular flavour that I would align with, because I'm in Scotland, and Scotland is basically heaven, so I don't need to go and live in any city in England. But for the people that want to do that, this is fantastic. Well done. And I've got a lot of questions. My main question is, obviously, I've got concerns around some red flags. We heard humanitarianism there, so I can't help think this could become a 15-minute city, so I'd like some reassurance there. But for me, the big question is that this is based upon a 2020 understanding of the world, and we are living through a time of incredible change. We've had all these step changes, Ali. We've had smartphones. We've now got AI. The future may look very different. The future may involve universal basic income. So how will this city work if people don't need to work, and they simply work in order to contribute? And because traditionally this idea of kind of clustering a lot of people in a small space, that kind of came from the industrial era. So that's my main question.
Okay, William, before I go back to Austin, the great thing about cities, this is according to Edward Glaser of Harvard University, is that cities are mankind's greatest invention. He notes that agglomerations of money and talent make societies richer, smarter and greener. Since companies move closer to their customers and people closer to their jobs, growing cities begets economic growth. But does it really, Austin, if we're going to be living in a world of AI when few of us have actually been going to the office in the first place?
Well, that's a big question. I think the idea is, as the last caller was suggesting, is that the need for ambition, the need for some kind of targeted vision as to where we want to be and maybe aspiring to get there is really what we're after. Now, what that vision of the future is then up to us to imagine. And I mean, I'm not sufficiently kind of that way inclined to be able to deal with AI in the here and now, let alone in 20 years' time. And it's happening faster and faster beyond our wildest dreams. So, yes, there will be an implication, but I think there are greater minds than mine, many, many greater minds than mine, who will be able to picture what the possibilities are. In some ways, I've just written a pamphlet looking at AI, and one of my essays is suggesting that our view of AI is negative, partly because we're living in a period where we don't know in control of our own lives. So we see AI as a threat, whereas obviously potentially it's phenomenally innovative and aspirational and can bring wonderful avenues of new productivity to light. But if we are living in a miserableless age where we see our own impact on the planet as being detrimental or negative, then we're bound to see everything that's going to happen in the future through that prism. So I think maybe we need to kind of, as the caller, if that was Mr. Angry, then I'd love to see him when he's pleased. I mean, I think that ultimately there is something in what you say that we just need to have something written down. And I think this is a kind of an early stage manifesto that we can kick around and work around whether it's actually going to be feasible. And there may be other visions which are better, worse, or whatever. But no, this is a good start, I think.
William, quick thought.
Yeah, I mean, it is a good start, but for me, I would make some changes. And you were just talking about cities there, Ali. I would disagree. So, Ali, you're invited to Scotland, the west coast of Scotland. Come up here on the nice weather in the summer, and I'll take you to some islands, and we'll change your mind about that.
Fantastic. That's really kind of you, William. Very good to talk to you. Appreciate it. Peter in Bishop Stortford. Good afternoon, Peter.
Hello. Good afternoon, Ali. Quick question. Where exactly is all this land that we're going to be built on? Where is this land that's sitting around doing nothing at the moment?
Well, this specific land that they're looking at is on the Cambridgeshire-Suffolk border. It is owned by Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, the Prime Minister of Dubai, who's also a big horse racing fan, and maybe he wants some stabling there for his horses. I don't know, but he's probably got quite a lot in Newmarket. I don't know if anyone's talked to the Sheikh yet, but maybe he wants to be altruistic and help out with this project.
Possibly. I mean, every acre of land that's built on, that's arable land, is 9,000
loaves of bread lost per year. So food security is a real thing, and we shouldn't just build willy-nilly over everything.
No, I agree with that. But what if it's
constantly told also? We're constantly told also that it's an ageing population. And so we wait a little while, all of us oldies will be dead. And then you can live in our houses, can't we?
Okay. Peter, that's not exactly an exciting thought. Look, Austin, Peter's asking, look, where are the houses going to go? He's also saying we can't just do it willy-nilly. It's got to be thought through. And just wait it out. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I'm not a big fan in... I'm not feeling particularly well today, but I don't really want to be... That is the vision for how we recover the housing market. But at the moment, you know, King Charles, as is Prince Charles, as was, is developing a huge estate of housing in Panbury down in Cornwall, all built and designed on a historic model using stonemasons and real, you know, timber sash windows and all the rest of it, using craftsmen of the area to create this kind of almost Disney-fied vision of the past. But at the same time, it's very popular. Lots of people are going there. And so there is a scope for kind of building which is complementary to the moment of the place and the time. So in some ways that's a laughable project because it's slightly parodied from what they're trying to create the past in the present, and this is now trying to create the future in the present, and I'd rather a second vision myself. So I think that where are the houses going to come from? Well, also we need to reinvigorate the housing industry. We have 250,000 fewer bricklayers than we require. The world is, you know, the world in terms of construction in this country is operating at a massive deficit, and we need to re-engineer that. Now, that's where AI might come in, right? That's where prefabrication and modern methods of construction might come in, and we can factory-based units and actually kind of kickstart a much speedier type of construction industry. I'm all for that because, you know, the idea that we're still making houses by putting one brick on top of another like we were 3,000 years ago is kind of quite an indictment in some respects. Yeah. If we could have robotics involved in that process or
3D printers.
3D printers, yes, obviously. Okay. 3D printers are, at the moment, ridiculously expensive and very small scale.
Yeah.
But if you kind of scale that up, fantastic.
Okay. Peter, thank you for your call. Dave in Uxbridge. Dave.
Hi, Ali. I actually know the area that they're looking in because my family are up in Thetford, just on the Norfolk-Suffolk border.
It's a lovely place. Go on.
That's sugar beet country as well, so it's quite open and flat. It's in the wrong place. I mean, at the end of the day, if we're going to build a new city, you've got to look at three things. Infrastructure has been said, but it's got to be connected. We can't even build a railway to the north, go up to Birmingham and beyond. And we need an industry to build a city around. All of the cities that have been built around industry, whether it be manufacturing, whether it be ports and harbours, whether it be... The military, whether you've got a naval base or whether you've got a military base, you can't just put a city there and throw people into it without having given them something to do.
That's a very interesting point. It's an interesting point, Dave. Austin, you need something to anchor a city around, do you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that we don't want it to be a massive housing estate.
Yes.
There has to be something there more than parks and hospitals and, you know, and what have you. There needs to be something to do. I mean, I think that's part of the issue of bringing in those industries. And those industries may be AI. We're talking about roughly in that kind of Cambridge kind of
The arc.
Information tech corridor,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, the
corridor. So there is a potential. That's why I think they've chosen this area. Mm. There is racing. If you look at China, 20 years ago, when they had their master plan for the whole Shanghai region, built the idea that they were going to build 9 new cities, 600 new villages, and 60 new towns and 600 villages. And they've built the 9 cities around Shanghai. One of those cities was called the Car City because they bringing Formula One to that area, which has now become a very popular stopping off point for Formula One. They have car manufacturing plants all around that area. So this has become the car area of Shanghai.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not suggesting that that's what's going to happen in this area because maybe Tesla will come there and put in a new factory. But I do think that there's a potential to think big and to think more imaginatively about what AI and those new industries that are
I think it's interesting. Dave, I appreciate your point, but I think maybe a bit of imagination is what we need. I mean, yes, we need to temper it with realism. I'm all for that too, and I'm all for also protecting the environment. Look, I am vice president of CPRE, so I have to bear that in mind, and I declare an interest there. But I also think we need to think inventively about how we're going to move forward in a completely modern age. Dave, thank you. Les says this. Both David Attenborough and Chris Packham, together with many eminent scientists, have been saying for some time that Britain's population is totally unsustainable and that we have twice the population the landmass can support and that our pigeons will come home to roost sooner or later. So carry on with these grand ideas and rushing towards the abyss. No civilization thinks that it will end, but they do. And have it's your funeral, says Robbie in Manston. Oh, another cheery note, Robbie. Thank you very much indeed for that one. Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? Fascinating discussion we're having here. Really high quality. 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Ali Mirage in conversation with Austin Williams, Director of the Future Cities Project on LBC. It's 147.
This is LBC.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
With Lidl Plus, you can get something for everyone with 3 for 2 across our party time range. Bower buns, veggie spring rolls, pigs in blankets and more. All made to share. Now there's plenty more delicious reasons to keep the party going. Lidl, more to value.
18 plus GB only. While stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 26/11/25.
Hello, I'm a National Lottery scratch card. You normally see me in the shops, but you know where I'd really like to be? Round yours at Christmas. I'm a great Christmas guest. You can use me as a festive place setting for a bit of fun. And you might even win a few quid. At the very least, I'll distract Uncle Dave from saying something inappropriate.
Oh. Buy a National Lottery scratch card and add some play to Christmas. Gift responsibly. Rules and procedures apply. Players and gifters must be 18 or over.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Ali Mirage on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Ali Mirage on LBC. Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? 0345 6060973. Text 84850. I'm in conversation with Austin Williams, the director of the Future Cities Project. And we are sort of chewing the fat, if you like, on this piece that was in the Sunday Telegraph, the bonkers plan to build a brand new city for 1 million people. This is going to be located supposedly on the Cambridgeshire-Suffolk border. Going to be for 1 million people. It's on land owned by the Sheikh of Abu Dhabi, the Prime Minister of Dubai, rather. But he hasn't been asked yet. But it's a very ambitious program. And if it ever gets off the ground, it could spell the future for all of us. What do you think? Would you welcome the building of new cities from scratch? 0345 6060973. Ross in Battersea. Ross, afternoon.
Good afternoon, Al. I hope you're well.
Yes, likewise. What would you like to say, Ross?
Yeah, so my concern is, to the future project, gentlemen, is that instead of it becoming an urban centre, it's just going to become another piece tacked onto the current economic structure of the UK that is basically London above all else. Because we don't need another city, in my view. We need to restructure the economy so that places like the North or the Midlands can become more economically self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned China earlier. China had 830 million people in the 1990s that lived rural. Mm-hmm. Today they've got 490-ish. Mm-hmm. So they've halved it roughly. We have 10 million people that live in rural areas. So we don't really have that population we can move rural to urban areas. So where's the population coming from? And are we going, is it just going to become another bit glued onto the side of London that gets forgotten in a few years?
Okay, Austin, what do you think about that? Because we just talked about anchoring the city to something. You talked about the tech corridor from Oxford to Cambridge. You talked about racing. What do you say to Ross's point here?
Well, there's a lot in that question. I think that, just very quickly to say, when we talked about Ebenezer Howard previously, which was the Garden City Movement guy 120 years ago, I mean, his idea was these kind of circular models with little arms sticking out. So he was basically trying to work out the optimum size for a living community linked to then a central community town
hub and spoke type, hub and spoke type thing.
Hub and spoke, yes.
Okay.
But that gave rise to the idea that were there to be future growth, then you could use one of those spokes to build another set of spokes and hubs. Yes.
Yeah.
So it would grow and grow almost organically.
Yeah,
now, whether that, again, that was fanciful and it was done in a very neat kind of packaged way for a Victorian, whether that actually works is another question altogether. But I do take the point that obviously the North, Scotland, a previous caller, have been left out in a lot of these conversations. Scotland is incredibly non-urban, unurbanized, very rural. Mm. Part of the UK, there's only 8%, 9% of this country is actually urban, let's remember. Right? A lot of it is actually rural, countryside, unspoiled forestry, you know, whatever it might be. So there's a lot of areas that we can actually start to think about to develop if we have the wit and wisdom to actually kind of consider it. That doesn't distract, I don't think, from the very fair point that was made earlier that Newcastle, where I used to live, Birmingham, where I used to live, Manchester, all these kind of areas require a lot of treatment, a lot of money, a lot of investment, a lot of improvement. So those areas of North Wales, those areas of the northeast of England, which have been left behind and people are leaving at the drop of a hat, need to have some sense of industry, which has collapsed subsequent to the deindustrialization of the 80s and 90s. So, I mean, these are big picture conversations. I just think this is one area where you can almost say this is a model of trying to create something new to kickstart a conversation rather than those kind of piecemeal add-ons that we always talk about.
Absolutely. It's definitely kickstarting a conversation, that's for sure. Ross, thank you. Les in Cambridge. Les.
Yeah, I'm actually in South Cambridge here. Currently walking my dog in the beautiful open countryside.
You better make the most of it, Les. They're coming for you.
Well, I'm only about 8 miles from Newmarket. I do wonder if the Sheikh can build it next to the humongous solar farm they're looking for planning permission with at the moment.
Right, right.
Which is in that neck of the woods.
Yeah.
My point was really that, actually, it reminded me a bit of me because I've always been one for starting big projects, never finishing it before I start the next one. And doesn't that remind you of something in this country?
Yeah.
Because we come up with these big projects. HS2 is the prime example. Mm. We finish it, and then we start another one.
But Les, hold that thought for a second. Austin, the difference is, though, that this project is not being driven by government or people in Whitehall. This is being driven by an organic group of people that have had enough, see a group of issues that need to be solved, and are trying to do something about it. Austin.
That's exactly right. I mean, since you mentioned solar farms, by the way, I went to Masdar, which was the model eco city in Abu Dhabi, which is just, you know, it's still being built. But when I went there, this actual solar farm was bigger than the city itself to power the city.
Wow.
So, you know, we have to consider that there is a role for these kind of small modular nuclear reactors in the conversation. But no, I mean, I think that there's a genuine need to accommodate some of these broader criticisms about the way that the urban environment is going to be created and maintained and managed, and also the urban and rural context in which they see themselves. So it doesn't become some kind of isolated, failed eco-city in the middle of nowhere. There has to be a dynamism, which is where maybe the private sector investment will almost ensure, so they say, ensure that it succeeds. That's you know, their investment is going to have some returns. Let's be frank.
Well, we'll finish your point, Austin. Go on.
Well, you know, that was generally it. I think that the private sector has a much more, as we can see from the way that the private sector, public sector pay debates are going on at the moment. There is a opportunity for failure and wiping the slate clean and ignoring the debts within the public sector.
Yeah.
Private sector need to make a buck.
Well, it's not only here that the private sector is looking at it. I mean, in the deserts of Arizona and Nevada, Bill Gates and Mark Law, two billionaires, are looking at building metropolises too. Les, go on.
A little bit bigger than the UK, don't you think?
Well, yes, I mean, it's about...
I can't remind people, Ali, that we are an island. If you look at the East Coast, not far from us here, that's falling into the sea. We're not getting bigger. So you think, does it make sense? We're a declining in size island. We have an increase in population. What we'll do is we'll build all over the resources that we need to grow the food to feed us. So then we become reliant on everybody else.
Well, it's a good point about food security as well, and the trade-offs made in all of this. And I think these are all big, complex, thorny questions which we need to think about. At least we're starting the conversation, Les, and I appreciate your input into it. Graham in Canvey Island. Graham.
Hi, how are you doing today? You're
very
right?
Well, sir. What would you like to say?
I'm representing the Labour side of things from that lens.
Mm-hmm.
Construction as a whole, especially in the south at the minute, it's starting to stop. And I don't know if anybody's even talking about it yet. I work with the cranes in London.
Mm-hmm.
Cranes are coming down. New cranes are not going up. And there's a reason for that slowdown at the minute that we've been seeing for the past 4 months. Now, I hear that HS2's been referenced in this conversation as well. I visit the HS2 builds. It's incredibly complex, but they are moving in the right direction. I'm not here to talk about that. But a new city... The new blood and life that would breathe into the labour force, the construction, the self-employed, the tradesmen in this country, I couldn't speak more to.
That's so interesting, Graham. That's so interesting to get your perspective. So you're welcoming, you sound excited by this.
I'm seeing things from the ground level and how it's slowing down. And I believe to a point next month, the government will have to address the slowdown that's happened. Put it this way, we have about 150 workers that work on tower cranes. I've got maybe 50 of them in work at the minute. We can't keep people in jobs for more than 2 to 3 days because new projects are not starting. The city is grinding to a halt, and I won't bore you into the reasons as to why. I'm sure people can pretty much understand what's going on.
Okay.
Call it a coming economical recession.
Okay.
But
okay.
A new city, we already see companies private like AstraZeneca.
Yep.
They already have a huge base just outside of Cambridge. We built a wing, part of their new research facility there.
Mm-hmm.
The M11, everything cut through Newmarket, and I forget where the other place was.
Yep.
They've had a huge infrastructure rebuild of their motorways. The groundwork is there.
Okay.
Building a new city is a big positive thing for the workforce.
Graham, thank you. Austin, 10 seconds response. I mean, what do you think?
I mean, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And there's a need to reinvigorate the construction industry, let alone kind of give more jobs to more people. Fundamentally, a positive end to a fantastically interesting conversation.
Thank you very much, Austin, Director of the Future Cities Project. Really, really rich conversation. Really appreciate you giving up your whole Sunday lunchtime for us. But I think it was a hugely important conversation. Great input from my listeners as well. I tell you, this is what I love about being on LBC. You just get such interesting perspectives from people from all different points of view. And this is how we're going to make progress in this country, by having these big conversations. And there's another one coming for you right now.